let's just start off with a concrete example of what is so bad about secular humanism in its Marxist-Leninist communist manifestation. You've all heard of the Berlin Wall. How many have actually been to the Berlin Wall? Okay, I've smuggled through the Berlin Wall. A few people have been to Berlin Wall before or after. Okay, anyone else been there before the Berlin Wall when it was still up, the whole Iron Curtain? Incredible experience to see it. A city, a country, a continent divided by 1,300 kilometers of obstacles. The Berlin Wall was concrete proof of the failure of so-called scientific socialism. To prevent Germans in the Soviet zone from fleeing to the Western zone in Berlin, a 165-kilometer wall was constructed to seal off West Berlin's Island of Freedom from the communist East Germany. And when they built it, the Volkspolizei, or the Vopos, came out, and the Russian tanks were facing the American and British tanks, and the barbed wire went up. And next thing you see, people lifting up a baby to show their family on the other side that a baby's been born, because there's no telephone communications between the one part of the city and the other. People would be standing on a ladder at the street corner to wave to their relatives on the other side, maybe to show how this child's growing later on. The wall got higher. The barbed wire got thicker. The wall went through many different evolutions and stages. Churches too close to the wall got imploded. You had a division between slave and free, communist and West. The Berlin Wall included 289 concrete observation posts or machine gun towers, 123 kilometers of electric fencing just around one city. And bear in mind that the electricity bill for about a meter of an electric fence is about that for a heater in your home. But you don't have the heat on all day. This is on all day, 365 days of the year, summer and winter. And that's only around Berlin. There was another death strip stretching 1,393 kilometers of the border between communist East Germany and free West Germany, constructed with 723 more observation posts or machine gun towers, another 1,161 kilometers of electric fencing, 54,000 self-firing devices. This is a human firing device, but I didn't have a picture of a self-firing device. And 190 kilometers of minefields. Buildings crashed, destroyed. Communists always promised land, bread, peace, jobs, homes. And when it comes to power, they abolish all those things and they demolish homes. It's amazing what liars they are. They promise so much and they deliver nothing of what they promised. Here's a church, the Church of Reconciliation, blown up, imploded. They just didn't like this church. Too close to the wall. Just at the Berlin Wall between the 13th of August 1961 and 30th of July 1983, I have exact stats for that because I went to the Berlin Wall to the Checkpoint Charlie Museum and I got these stats at that time. I don't have the most up-to-date stats covering the whole time. But 73 people during that small period of time were killed by the communists while attempting to escape over the Berlin Wall, including Peter Fetcher. Here's a picture of him with a suit he has given on his 18th birthday. Next day, he's lying in that same suit, machine gunned, dead, lying on the communist side. This picture was taken from the western side. He bled to death. They waited for him to die after 2 hours, and then they carried him back over the barbed wire. Here's this famous picture of the communist Vopos, Volkspolizei, taking 18-year-old Peter Fetcher the day after his birthday back over the barbed wire after he bled to death. Shot in the back by his own army and police, so to speak, for attempting to go from one side of the border to the other. That's just one of many examples. There were another 182 people killed while attempting to escape from East Germany to West Germany across the border. And that's just during the time period of 61 to 83 that we have exact stats of, that we know of. And all the way along the wall, you'll see memorials to people with their dates of when they were killed on the border. At least 60,000 people were imprisoned for preparation, assistance, or complicity in attempting to escape from East Germany to West Germany, with sentences ranging from a low 16 months to life imprisonment. for the crime of trying to go from one part of the country to another. Yet, 191,559 people succeeded in escaping from East to West Germany, East to West Berlin, sorry, just East to West Berlin, just between 1961 and 83. I got those stats when I was at the Checkpoint Charlie Museum. 38,000 escaped by tunnels, by improvised air machines or hot air balloons, hidden inside vehicles, traveling from East to West Berlin. 2,768 East German soldiers and officers on duty, including a colonel, escaped to the West during that same time period, just in West Berlin. And here you can see our father shot over a slide and slid his son and then himself to freedom. And you can see some chemist made homemade explosives, blew a hole in the wall. Another man drove a truck straight through the wall. This man succeeded in getting 11 people to safety, but he was shot and killed. One bullet passed the door and it fatally killed him. He died, the driver died, but everyone else in the truck succeeded in escaping. The oldest man to escape by tunnel, 84 years old. Here is the youngest to escape, 4 years old, being brought up by his father in a tunnel. This was the subject of a Disney true life film, how a family built a hot air balloon to escape from East Germany to West Germany, and they succeeded. This is one of the most famous pictures of an East German Volkspolizei, a Vopo, on the one side of the border. I've actually seen the 8mm film at Checkpoint Charlie, how he's standing there on guard, looking left, looking right, and then running for the border, and then he flung his AK-47 to one side, flung up his helmet and raised his hands. Of course, he didn't want to get shot for invading the western border, so he quickly got rid of his rifle, and you could see the biggest smile across his face. From the founding of the German Democratic Republic, the GDR, it's funny how they always have the word democratic in the names of countries that are not. Whenever a country is called democratic, you know it isn't. Like the German Democratic Republic, the People's Democratic Republic of Congo, People's Democratic Republic of China. Anything with the word democratic in it isn't. Just a rule of thumb. And from the time they founded the GDR, which was, by the way, the showcase of communism, it was the best run communist country in the world. Of all the Soviet bloc countries, it was their showcase. It was the highest standard of living in the whole of the Soviet bloc. And it was a hellhole. 4.5 million East Germans, that's a quarter of the population, voted with their feet by fleeing to the West across the biggest, toughest obstacle course ever created by human beings. 4.5 million. Now, that may not sound impressive considering half of the population of Zimbabwe have fled Zimbabwe. But remember, half of the population fled Zimbabwe, but they didn't have to get through the Berlin Wall to get there. They didn't have to cross minefields and barbed wire and electric fencing. And these people got through the worst obstacle crossings with killer dogs and patrols with shooting sights. It was incredible what these people went through. This, by the way, is the famous Checkpoint Charlie. You all heard of Checkpoint Charlie? I've smuggled through Checkpoint Charlie. Very exhilarating. Now, observe if you're driving, you've got to drive around these concrete blocks and under these peppermint sticks. Now, here is a truck that failed. This bus had a lot of people in it, and they were all machine gunned to death before the final barrier. They didn't make the final barrier. They're all dead before they made. You can see the bullet-ridden bus. This was an unsuccessful attempt. Here's one of the successful attempts. I saw this also on 8mm film. The people in the West shot over smoke to cover their attack, their escape. And here they came running through the fence, and you can just see this girl's got blood flowing down her head. As she went under barbed wire, she cuts her forehead badly, and here she's being united with her fiancé in the West. Now, observe. This is another great escape. This man bought a car that's low that would fit under the peppermint stick barriers. He put his fiancé in East Berlin in the back. He put his future mother-in-law in the boot. And he drove out, he removed the front windscreen, and he drove out weaving. Now, let me remind you, He had to come weaving all the way along there with literally bullets flying out, amazingly fitting just under the barrier, and he was free. And here you can see, this is another couple that did the same thing that same week, and then they put these new barriers down so that nobody could try that trick again. This was another successful escape. Here you can see this lady here was a seamstress, a tailor. She's engaged to this man. She made these Russian uniforms at home for her fiancé and his two friends. They liberated the staff car, saluted to the soldiers at the gate on the way out, and they drove into the west. Because part of the Berlin Agreement was that soldiers could travel between the four sectors freely. Between the four powers, Russian, British, American, French. And so they had free access, and they just went through saluting. And at the other end, she was under the front seat. They bring out the tailor who made it possible. That was one of the successful escapes from East Berlin. Is this giving you an impression what a workers' paradise this must have been? That people are going to this kind of ingenuity to get away from it? You won't believe how people got out. How on earth did this woman fit behind the radiator in this car? Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady, had this to say about the Berlin Wall. She said, "The Berlin Wall stands as concrete proof that when people have a choice, they choose to be free. Freedom has its problems, but we've never had to build walls to keep our people in. And that's a fact." And time and again, we've seen people choose to be free. People flee from oppression, they flee to places where they've got higher standards of living. Nobody's fleeing by the thousands into Cuba. Nobody's fleeing into Zimbabwe right now. People are fleeing away from oppression. They flee to South Africa, they flee to America, they flee to West Germany, they flee to Great Britain. They don't flee in the way of North Korea. They don't flee to Red China. You know? Just an observation. Okay, what's the heart of communism? Much has been said about the economics and the social analysis of communism, but as a Christian, I want to look at the heart of communism. Beneath all the philosophical verbiage and political rhetoric, what is the driving force of Marxism-Leninism? Let's take Vladimir Lenin's words. "Atheism is the natural and inseparable part of communism." That's what Vladimir Lenin, one of the top authorities of communism, had to say. Vladimir Lenin also said, "We must hate. Hatred is the basis of communism." Well, there you have it. Atheism and hatred. Che Guevara, who adorns many a t-shirt, said, "Hatred is an element of the struggle, a relentless hatred of the enemy, transforming him into an effective, violent, selective, cold-blooded, killing machine. A people without hatred cannot vanquish a brutal enemy." Karl Marx, he's the big pig major in Animal Farm, remember? Now, he's the one who thought up the things that Snowball and Napoleon went further, if you can think of the George Orwell classic Animal Farm. Well, Karl Marx wrote, "I wish to avenge myself against the one who rules above. The hellish vapors rise and fill the brain till I go mad, and my heart is utterly changed. See this sword?" He pointed to his pen. "The Prince of Darkness sold it to me. With disdain I will throw my gauntlet." That's like his armored glove. "Full in the face of the world and see the collapse of this pygmy giant. Then I will wander godlike and victorious through the ruins of the world. And giving my words an act of force, I will feel equal to the Creator." Those are still in existence in his handwriting, written by Karl Marx. These are poems he wrote. Richard Wurmbrand wrote the book Marx and Satan. He gives, and this book is available in our shop and our library. We've got the whole thing. He's got it well documented. Richard Wurmbrand did a thorough study on Karl Marx's Satanist background. Karl Marx was a Satanist, as was most of the Politburo who started the first Russian Revolution. Communism at its heart has always been occultic and Satanist. No, he wrote, these are poems he wrote in his own handwriting. That these, do you know, his family converted to Lutheranism, to Christianity. They were Jewish, but they, for economic reasons, became Christians. And so he had a Christian upbringing, Karl Marx. His father had been a convert. And he turned against Christianity with a vengeance. Friedrich Engels, the best friend of Karl Marx, said, Karl Marx is a monster possessed by 10,000 devils. Now that's what he said about his friend. Presumably that was meant to be a compliment. Robert Paine, a friend of Karl Marx, said, Karl Marx had the devil's view of the world and the devil's malignity. That's malice. Sometimes he seemed to know he was accomplishing the works of evil. Again, this wasn't criticism. This is praise from his friend. A Marxist newspaper wrote back in the 1920s, we do not fight against believers and not even against clergymen. We fight against God to snatch believers from him. The slogan of the Soviets in the earliest days was, let us drive out the capitalists from the earth and God from heaven. Does this remind you of what I was sharing on Saturday night about the French Revolution? The Russian Revolution was very similar in its anti-Christian origins. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, one of the greatest Russian authors of all time, the Nobel Literature Award winner, the man who spent over a decade in communist concentration camps under Joseph Stalin, he wrote, the world has never before known a godlessness as organized, militarized, and tenaciously malevolent as that preached by Marxism. Within the philosophical system of Marx and Lenin, and at the heart of their psychology, hatred of God is the principal driving force, more fundamental than all their political and economic pretensions. Militant atheism is not merely incidental or marginal to communist policies. It's not a side effect, but the central pivot. To achieve its diabolical ends, communism needs to control a population devoid of religious and national feeling. And this entails a destruction of faith and nationhood. Communists proclaim both of these objectives openly, and just as openly they put them into practice. Alexander Solzhenitsyn gave the speech at Buckingham Palace in England before the Queen of England. He should know. All of this I've taken from a history of communism in South Africa and from Was Karl Marx a Satanist, written by Richard Wurmbrand, both of which are in our library and our bookshop. So what is the worst disaster in the history of the world? Lord Acton said, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. He wrote this in his commentary on the French Revolution, but boy, is it relevant to the Soviet Revolution. Although governments are meant to protect their citizens, secular states in the 20th century murdered over 169 million of their own citizens. Now, this astonishing statistic is the result of decades of research by political science professor R.J. Rummel of the University of Hawaii. Professor Rummel published this book, Death by Government, which I've read, not an easy read. In this 500-page book, Professor Rummel presents his shocking research. The charts and the statistics measuring the life-taking propensities of secular governments were developed from professors' analysis of 8,200 sources involved over 4,200 consolidations and calculations, which were organized into appendix tables totaling more than 18,100 rows. This guy's a statistician who loves numbers. I presume he's good at maths at school. And he goes through the different lethal regimes. You may be interested to get the list of the most lethal regimes in history. Well, he's actually talking about just the last century, just the 20th century. Top, and by most lethal regimes, he's taken in terms of the percentage of the own population killed. Percentage, not numbers. So from top to bottom, the most lethal government in the 20th century was Cambodia, because of the percentage of the population that they wiped out. And Turkey, number two. They killed 1.5 million Christians just in 1915. Followed by Yugoslavia, followed by Poland, Turkey, Czechoslovakia, Mexico, the Soviet Union. Boy, they're far down the road. Cambodia, again, he's got two different Cambodian leaders, because he's got the Cambodia under Khmer Rouge, then Cambodia under Samarin, who followed the Khmer Rouge. Then Uganda, Angola, Romania, North Korea, Uganda, and Mongolia. You may say, wait a minute, where's Nazi Germany? They don't make the top 15. They're not in the top 15 of the most lethal governments in the 20th century because they didn't kill as high a percentage of their own population as these 15 did. Cambodia is still a communist government at this moment, but it's not Khmer Rouge, no. The Khmer Rouge were there for a very short time, and then the Vietnamese came in and took them out. Now remember, the Vietnamese were Soviet-backed. The Cambodians were Red Chinese-backed. So basically, a Soviet-backed government took over the Red Chinese-backed government. So Red China and Soviet Union got a bit of a competition going there. Just one appendix table alone amounted to over 50 pages and is provided in a supplementary volume. It couldn't fit in a 500-page book. Statistics of Democide, Estimates, Sources, and Calculations on 20th Century Genocide and Mass Murder. Professor Rommel coins the term democide for mass murder by governments. Now, you may wonder why I'm getting to this. Well, first of all, if any of us study political science, anyone here studying or studied political science? Nope. Most political science is full of absolute fantasy, talking about what government should be, but it doesn't actually deal with what governments really do. The other problem is almost all governments are hostile to Christianity and try to suggest that Christianity is one of the worst things that can happen. But we can point out, as you'll see in the film tonight, in fact, everything good in the world comes from Christianity, really. And we can also point out that governments aren't the solution, governments are the problem. Governments have killed more people than even disease. They've killed more people than the bubonic plague. They've killed more people than the mumps, the measles, than any kind of disease you can care about. And we just talk about the 20th century. Secular humanist governments have been the most murderous instruments of death in history. Professor Rommel notes that textbooks on political science need to be modernized to recognize political realities. While most textbooks refer to the functions of government as law and order, individual security, cultural maintenance, and social welfare, the fact is we have numerous examples of governments that killed hundreds of thousands and even millions of their own citizens, enslaved the rest, and abolished traditional culture. There's the common and fundamental justification of government, that government exists to protect citizens against the anarchy, the anarchical jungle that would otherwise threaten their lives and their property. But such archaic or sterile views show no appreciation for democide's existence and all its related horrors and suffering. They are inconsistent with a regime that stands astride the society like a gang of thugs over hikers they've captured in the woods, robbing all, raping some, torturing others for fun, murdering others they don't like, terrorizing the rest into servile obedience. And this exact characterization of many past and present governments, such as Idi Amin's government in Uganda, hardly squares with conventional political science. Most political science today is out of touch with reality, is what he's saying. Rommel, as a political science professor, observes that while library stacks have been written on the possible nature and consequences of nuclear war and how it might be avoided, the reality is that up to 360 million civilians have been slaughtered by their own governments just in the 20th century alone. Do you know we've just come out of the worst century in the history of the world in terms of murder, death toll from war and genocide? No century in history has been as bloody as the 20th century. Do you know that no century has been worse for the church than the 20th century? At no time in history has the church lost more people to martyrdom than the 20th century. We have lost more Christians deliberately targeted and killed for their faith in the 20th century than in the previous 19 centuries combined. You thought the Roman Empire was bad, Nero and all that? Drop in a bucket compared to the 20th century in terms of the sheer numbers of Christians murdered by governments. Yet very few books have been dealing with the overall human cost of death by government. Now, the Black Book of Communism is one exception. Power kills. Absolute power kills absolutely. This is the message emerging from this book on genocide and the government mass murder. Democide in the 20th century. The more power a government has, the more it can act arbitrarily according to the whims and desires of the elite. And the more it will make war on others and murder its foreign and domestic subjects. Think Zimbabwe. The more constrained the power of governments, the more the power is diffused, decentralized, checked and balanced, the less it will aggress on others and commit genocide. Totalitarian communist governments slaughtered their people by the tens of millions. In contrast, many democracies can barely bring themselves to execute serial murderers. So today, in Sweden or Denmark, you can have a murderer, a serial murderer, and the government can't bring themselves to hang the guy. He lives in a palatial five-star hotel that they call a prison. Maybe getting life imprisonment, but they can't bring themselves to kill a serial mass murderer. But in governments like Red China, they kill people by the millions. Death by government includes numerous charts and tables, including the 15 most lethal regimes. Cambodia, Turkey, Yugoslavia, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Soviet Union, Uganda, Angola, Romania, North Korea, and Mongolia. These are the 15 mega murderers. And so Professor Rommel then documents how just these 15 mega murderers, just those 15, wiped out 151 million people. Notice the numbers are changing because he's taking different aspects. Okay, this is just 15 secular states. And they killed 151 million people. That's almost four times as many as died in battle in all the 20th century's wars. You think war in 20th century is bad, and it was. The First and Second World War were hideous. Bombing of whole cities. And yet, that's only a quarter of the death toll. All the wars of the 20th century combined, a quarter of the death toll of these 15 states alone. And by the way, we do have 220 states in the world. In total, during the first 88 years of the 20th century, now he's taking another stat, okay? He's just limiting up to 1988. Why? Because 1989, Berlin Wall came down and Iron Curtain collapsed. So, in the first 88 years of the 20th century, almost 117 million men, women, and children have been shot, beaten, tortured, knifed, burned, starved, frozen, crushed, worked to death, buried alive, drowned, hung, buried, killed, or any of the other many ways in which governments have inflicted death on unarmed, helpless citizens and foreigners. We're not talking about enemy soldiers killed in battle. The dead could conceivably be nearly 360 million people if they used other stats, because they don't have full stats available on everything, like Red China, they don't have their stats. Our species has been devastated by modern black plague, like the bubonic plague that hit Europe and killed a third of its population just before the Reformation. But this is a plague of power, not of germs. Professor Rommel documents that Joseph Stalin of the Soviet Union by far leads the list. He ordered the death of millions, knowingly set in train events leading to the death of millions of others, wiping out the farms in Ukraine, the so-called de-kulakization policy that seems to have inspired Robert Mugabe. Killer farmers, because they're all reactionary. And as the ultimate dictator, he was responsible for still millions more people killed by his henchmen. Far above all is the Gulag. You know what the Gulag is? That's a network of over 3,000 concentration camps, slave labor camps, around the Soviet Union. A system created by Vladimir Lenin, but built up under Stalin. In some 70 years, the Gulag chewed up 40 million lives. Death by government documents that most of the victims of democide, some 40%, are from Asia and the Middle East. The highest proportion of any region's population were from the territory of the former Soviet Union. The Soviet Union and Red China accounted for most of the deaths by government in the 20th century. That Stalin, Lenin, and their successors murdered almost 62 million Soviet citizens and foreigners is little comprehended outside the Soviet Union. We have people in Cape Town who go to shops called Soviet and wear Red Star T-shirts. Soviet. Would you wear a swastika? Would you wear a picture of Adolf Hitler and get people out there wearing pictures of Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin, Vladimir Lenin, Che Guevara, and Soviet Union Red Stars, which is red with the blood of millions of Christians? Death by government calculates that between 35 million minimum and 105 million, very likely, people were murdered by the Communist Party of China just between 1949 and 1987. In fact, the Guinness Book of Record gives Mao Zedong the position of being the greatest mass murderer in history. They attribute 69 million murders to Mao Zedong. That's Guinness Book of Record. Professor Rommel says he doesn't know if that's true. He's just working on government stats that they have in hand. And they don't have China's stats because China hasn't fallen. They do have Russia's stats, because they've had access to their archives. They do have Romania's stats and so on. So they're working on the stats they've got. He's just working on official stats. He's not accepting what Guinness Book of Records reckons. He's because it's not confirmed by the country's own archives. Now, some of the statistics in death by government that may surprise you is, do you know the Japanese government in the Second World War murdered almost 6 million civilians, 5,890,000 civilians? Did you know that? I didn't know that till I read this. Unbelievable, and death goes through prisoners of war and so on, all in thousands, going through massacres, bombing, chemical, biological warfare, and so on and so forth. Tito's communist partisans murdered 600,000 in Yugoslavia. Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge wiped out between 2 and 3 million Cambodians. Ottoman Turkey wiped out 1.7 million, mostly Christian Armenians, between 1909 and 1918. Most of those in 1915. Yes? These skulls and bones are part of the museum of the killing fields in Cambodia. You can go to the museum and you can see those bones that are out there. This is all part of the people who were killed because they wore glasses or they were teachers or they had hands that obviously hadn't done manual work and therefore they were intelligentsia. They managed to take a city, Phnom Penh, of 3 million people and bring it down to 18,000. They believed urbanization was bad, rural was good. They chased people out of the cities, out of the hospitals, let the people die in the countryside, put them in concentration camps, wiped them out by the millions. That was a University of Paris graduate, Pol Pot, of the Khmer Rouge. Khmer Rouge. Rouge means red. French. The Red Khmers. Idi Amin's regime, they say, murdered 300,000 civilians in Uganda. I thought the stats were 650,000, but I'm using Professor Rommel's stats. He's using official stats. Just between 1971 and 1979. The MPLA, I would have put it as a million, but they put the MPLA massacres in Angola as only 125,000. Well, his stats on Africa aren't very complete, but that's what's in the book. The communist regime in Poland wiped out 1.5 million people just between 1945 and 1948, and most of those people are Germans. German people in Poland were killed, 1.5 million of them, between 1945 and 1948, and I bet you haven't heard of that. Because most of Poland today is Germany. That's to make up for the fact that most of Poland was taken to Russia. So Russia moved everything over. And they just killed the Germans who were in Poland, who were still there, and moved the Poles into Germany, killed and moved Poles out of Russia, and just removed the map. Professor Rommel concluded, as the arbitrary power of a regime increases massively, as we move from democratic through authoritarian to totalitarian regimes, the amount of killings jumps by huge multiples, exponentially. And his exhaustive documentation exhibits the sheer lethality of power. You know, governments and politicians make so many great promises and people get so excited, and if they just knew what was coming on the other side. He also concludes that never has there been a war between involving violent military action between stable democracies. That's such a challenging thought. You look at that and think, I'd like to think of an exception to disprove that rule. If you can think of one, do. He says, stable democracies. Stable democracies don't tend to fight one another. Indeed, we have here a general principle that is gaining acceptance among students of international relations and war. Mainly, democracies don't or rarely make war on each other. To this I'd add, the less democratic two states are, the more likely it is they will fight each other. Power gradually extirpates from the mind every humane and gentle virtue. That's why term limitation makes sense. Notice how every year Mugabe gets worse. He's been in power 31 years. Or Fidel Castro. Or Gaddafi. The longer the guy's in power, the worse they get. Is that not so? Professor Rommel's colossal masterpiece, Death by Government, conclusively proves that far from governments being the solution to crime and violence, historically, governments have been the prime culprits for crime and violence. Far from governments being the solution, they're more often not the problem. Most government policies to deal with crime and poverty are counterproductive, creating more crime and more poverty. Nowhere is this seen more clearly than the state's attempt to disarm civilians. Every genocide and democide of the 20th century was preceded by gun control and disarmed civilians. Just as criminals prefer unarmed victims, tyrants prefer disarmed citizens. A government that does not trust its citizens with weapons cannot be trusted with power. Freedom is when the government fears the people. Tyranny is when the people fear the government. No government can be trusted with a monopoly of force. Decentralization of power, the rule of law, and of armed citizens are essential foundations for freedom. The freest country in the world is Switzerland. Why? There's no central government that has any kind of power at all. Everything is on the canton level or the provincial level. And every home in Switzerland's armed. Switzerland's the freest country in the world. They've got the most armed population in the world. They've got the lowest crime rate in the world. They've got one of the strongest economies in the world. Switzerland has stayed out of wars for centuries because everyone in Switzerland are the army. Switzerland doesn't have an army. Switzerland is an army. The entire population is armed and dangerous. And the hills are alive every weekend with the sound of gunfire. Shooting is the number one national sport. Nobody wants to mess with Switzerland. Everybody gave Switzerland the wide berth in the First and Second World War, even though they would have loved to have gone through it, but it wasn't worth it. If the Swiss would have given them more trouble. Hitler preferred to invade the Soviet Union than Switzerland. I mean, the Swiss are the best shots in the world, and they've got the best rifles in the world, and I've fired some of them, I'll tell you. Outstanding. Well, I must give you an example of an individual, because personal is better. T-shirts around Cape Town frequently have this ugly, dirty, unwashed, Marxist mass-murdering bank robber on it. The popularity of Che Guevara's image on T-shirts is quite bizarre. According to the company that sells Che Guevara products, Che's image has a rock and roll edge to it that we're looking for. Advocates claim that Che is chic for the sophisticated, and it's an icon of what's cool. However, wearing a T-shirt with the image of Che Guevara with his beret and communist style makes about as much sense as wearing an image of Khmer Rouge mass murder Pol Pot of Cambodia, Joseph Stalin, or Guinness Book of Records mass murder of all time, Mao Zedong. For all the attempts, such as Robert Redford's Motorcycle Diaries propaganda piece, to transport Fidel Castro's hitman Che Guevara into some kind of romantic cult hero, the fact that Che Guevara was a mass murderer. Forget Charles Manson and all these characters. This guy has over 4,000 people's blood on his hands. In the Cuban Revolution, Che Guevara ran the slave labor camps. He's the Minister of Interior. He didn't run the parks. As Interior Minister, he ran the mass executions, firing squads, the slave labor camps, and the prisons. He was Fidel Castro's number one prosecutor and most efficient executioner. Under Che, the walls of the old fort in Havana rang nightly with the fusillades of the firing squads. Just in 3 years, 1959 to 1962, over 4,000 executions, most by firing squads, were documented to have taken place under Castro's executioner, Che Guevara. All these executions took place without any due process of law, no fair trials. These were what you call summary trials, just out-of-hand executions. Che admitted ordering several thousand executions. Perhaps those who want to wear Che's image on the front of their T-shirt should have his quote printed in the back. Hatred, unbending hatred, turning a man into an effective, violent, selective, cold-blooded killing machine. This is what a soldier must become, crazy with fury. I stain my rifle red while slaughtering any enemy that falls in my hands. My nostrils dilate while savoring the acrid odor of gunpowder and blood. With the deaths of my enemies, I prepare my being for the sacred fight and will join the triumphant proletariat with a bestial howl. That'd be a good quote for the back of a Che Guevara T-shirt. What about this one for Christians stupid enough to wear his T-shirt? In fact, if Christ himself stood in my way, I, like Nietzsche, would not hesitate to squish him like a worm. Well, he's got the opportunity right now. But, in fact, he's been squished like a worm. Here's Che Guevara spread out after he has sorted out. Karl Marx declared the first battlefield is a rewriting of history. It would appear that anyone who is participating in the romanticizing and popularizing, glamorizing of this Marxist mass murderer Che Guevara are not only advertising their ignorance of history, but they're helping to reorganize reality and promoting the undeserved hero worship of a communist killer. While Che Guevara could be brave when he is murdering disarmed civilians, including a 14-year-old child in the La Cabana fortress, he was cowardly when he was captured by the Bolivian army. Here's a picture of him after he was captured, just before he was shot. He groveled and begged for his life before the Bolivians did to him what he had done to so many other people. Commies are not cool. I, for one, am not interested in decorating myself with the image of a dirty, unwashed communist tyrant, anti-Christian, persecutor of the church. Filthy scumbag, he's burning in hell, that's where he needs to be. While they promise him liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption, and may I add, hypocrites, to be using credit card purchases on the web to buy Che Guevara t-shirts. Are these guys commies or what? Are they wanting to be capitalist or commie? Che Guevara t-shirts, it's ridiculous. It's like having a Christian casino. Yes, you had a question? Ah, excellent. So, that's why I say the greatest killer in all of history is communism. We could give a lot of examples, but these are some of our books. Black Book Communism, Holocaust in Rwanda, Killing Fields in Mozambique. The 20th century has been the bloodiest century of history. Humanism has proven to be the most destructive religion of all time. And far more people have been killed in the name of atheism than by all other religions combined, and that even includes Islam.